Vilaya Pita has been killed, and Krishna has walked into the assembly, wrestling assembly. And he's decorated in his wonderful way, and he's carrying the tusks of the elephant upon his shoulder, on one of his shoulders. Balaram carrying the other tusk on his other shoulder. Krishna doesn't have his shirt on, he has his hair tied back, ready for action. And his body has some perspiration on it, and also some blood from the killing of the elephant. So when the people there in the wrestling arena saw him, well, the first person practically describes it, saw him, was Kamsa. And he was filled with great dread. Was overwhelmed with anxiety because he understood that the two brothers were invincible. They were arrayed with various ornaments. Krishna and Balaram had long arms. They were beautifully dressed, and they were attractive to all the people assembled there. They were dressed as if they were going to act on a dramatic stage, and they drew the attention of all the people. The citizens of Mathura city who saw Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, became very pleased, and they began to look on his face with insatiable glances, as if they were drinking the nectar of heaven. Seeing Krishna gave them so much pleasure that it appeared as if they were not only drinking the nectar of seeing his face, but also smelling the aroma and licking up the taste of his body, and were embracing him and Balaram with their arms. And then they began to talk amongst themselves about the two transcendental brothers. This is the first time most of them had seen Krishna and Balaram after hearing about him. For a long time they had heard of the beauty and activities of Krishna and Balaram, but now they were personally seeing them face to face. They thought that Krishna and Balaram were two plenary incarnations of the Supreme Personality of God and Narayan, who had appeared in Vrindavan. Now we'll just read up to that point, and then the residents of Mathura, as they're looking at Krishna, they began to talk about what they have heard about him, what they know about him. And here's what the actual text says, and then we'll hear the purport of Bhakti Thakur. The people seemed to be drinking Krishna and Balaram with their eyes. In other words, all their senses were fully focused on him. That's a perfection. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also displayed this perfection, and it's described at the end of Chaitanya Charitamrita Antalila. They seem to be drinking Krishna and Balaram with their eyes, licking them with their tongues. In other words, they were fully absorbed. They weren't actually licking them and things like that. They seem to be smelling them with their nostrils and embracing them with their arms. Reminded of the Lord's beauty, character, charm, and bravery, the members of the audience began describing those features to one another according to what they had seen and heard. So here's the comment of Krishna. This verse describes how the Mathuravasis relished the beauty of Krishna. With wide open eyes, they looked, and with thirsty tongues, they tasted. With fled nostrils, they smelled, and with wide open arms, they embraced Krishna. They began to speak about what they had seen, breaking the bow, because they had seen when Krishna came into Mathura right after seeing Kubja, and Krishna went to the, after he was decorated so nicely, he went to the arena where the sacrificial bow was kept, and he just broke it, so they had described what they had seen and what they had heard, such as lifting Govardhan Hill, but not in any chronological order, because it's explained later, because when ordinary people pass around news, it always gets somewhat disturbed and out of order. Krishna's body was very attractive, with his bluish black color mixed with red blood and the elephant tusk in his hand. So different colors were there, bluish black, red, and elephant tusk is white. They remembered Krishna's qualities of heroism, the varieties of his sweetness, such as his laughter and sidelong glances, and his boldness in breaking the bow without hesitation. Having seen or heard these things, they tried to remember them, although they were not qualified and to talk about them. The people said, citizens of Mathura began to recite Krishna's pastimes, his birth as the son of Vasudev, his being taken into the care of Nanda Maharaj and his wife in Gokul, and all those events leading to his coming to Mathura to favor them, meaning the residents of Mathura being favored by Krishna and Balaram. So it seems like all the history of Krishna and Balaram being the son of Vasudev is now in the open, and everyone's talking about it, because before it wasn't clear to Kamsa who exactly Krishna was, or who was the eighth son of Vasudeva and Devaki. And then it became clear when Narada told him. I think that's in chapter 36. And then immediately, as soon as Kamsa heard that, he sent a kura to Vrindavan and made this plan. And now the fructification of the plan is going to take place. So they began to speak of all the events. They spoke of the killing of the demon Putana, as well as the killing of Trinavarta, who came as a whirlwind. They also recalled the deliverance of the twin brothers from within the Jamala Arjuna trees. The citizens of Mathura spoke about amongst themselves Sankarchuda, Keshi, Virukasura, and many other demons were killed by Krishna and Balaram in Vrindavan. Krishna also saved all the cowherd men of Vrindavan from a devastating fire. He chastised the Kaliya snake in the water of the Yamuna, and he curbed the false pride of the heavenly king Indra. Krishna held up the great mountain, Govardhan Hill, in one hand for 7 continuous days, and saved all the people of Gokul from incessant rain, hurricane, and hailstorms. They also began to remember other enlivening activities. The damsels of Vrindavan were so pleased by seeing Krishna's beauty and participating in his activities that they forgot the troubles of material existence. By seeing Krishna and thinking of him, they forgot all sorts of fatigue. So this is the first time they're actually seeing Krishna. They're sitting around in the theater practically, and Krishna walks in this dramatic way, an amphitheater with the seats on the sides, and everyone is there, and Krishna walks in, and they're describing, oh, this is the one who has killed Putana. This is the one who has lifted Govardhan Hill. This is the one who has danced on the heads of Kaliya, and this is the one who so attracted the damsels of Braja that they, practically speaking, forgot all of material existence. The Mathura citizens discussed the dynasty of Yadu, saying that because of Krishna's appearance in this dynasty, the Yadus would remain the most celebrated family in the whole universe. The citizens of Mathura then began, because this is the city of the Yadavs, practically. The citizens of Mathura then began to speak about Balaram. They spoke of his very beautiful lotus-petaled eyes, and they remarked of him, "This boy has killed the Pralamba demon and many others also." While they were thus talking about the activities of Krishna and Balaram, they heard the vibrations of different bands announcing the wrestling match. So that was all preliminary. So he killed Sankatsuta, Kesi. He made Putana and the whirlwind demon meet with death. He pulled down the twin Arjuna trees and killed Sankatsuta, Kesi, Dhanukasura, and similar demons. He saved the cows and cowherd boys from a forest fire, and he subdued the serpent Kaliya. He removed Lord Indra's false pride by holding up the best of mountains with one hand for an entire week, thus protecting inhabitants of Gokul from rain, wind, and hail. So when they saw Krishna, he was so attractive, they couldn't do anything but talk about him, because he was so attractive. The gopis overcame all kinds of distress and experienced great happiness by seeing his face, which was always cheerful, with smiling glances and ever free of fatigue. Vishnu's comment. Because of seeing Krishna's face, the gopis were easily able to surpass the obstacles and scoldings of their husbands, mother-in-laws, and other relatives. It is said that under his full protection, the Yadu dynasty will become extremely famous and attain wealth, glory, and power. The lotus-eyed brother of his, Lord Balaram, is the proprietor of all transcendental opulences. He has killed Pralamba, Vatsasura, Baka, and other demons. What do you think about that? I'll read it again. He has killed Pralamba. Who are they talking about? Balaram. Vatsasura, Baka, and other demons. What do you think about that? Who killed Pralambasura? Who killed Vatsasura? Krishna. He whirled them around, and then when he died, he threw them into a kapita tree, a rose apple tree. Who killed Bakasura? Krishna. And other demons. So, they're talking about Balaram. Here's the comment of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura. First Krishna killed Vatsasura and then Bakasura. Later Balaram vanquished Pralambasura. However, the Mathuravasi speaking this verse give the wrong sequence and they credit Balaram as the annihilator of all these demons. The reason for the mistake is that as news of Krishna's exploits spread amongst ordinary people, the facts became somewhat muddled, confused. So then, it's time for the wrestling match. So, while the people talked in this way, and the musical instruments resounded, the wrestler, Chanura, addressed Krishna and Balaram with the following words. Chanura said, "O son of Nanda, hey Nandasuno, hey Rama, you two are well respected by courageous men and are both skillful at wrestling. Having heard of your prowess, the king called you here wanting to see for himself." Subjects of the king. Now, I'll try to understand his psychology, the psychology of Chanura. What is he trying to make sure with Krishna? Because remember, what the people in the wrestling arena have seen, or the spectators have seen these two beautiful boys walk in. But they're just young boys, and these wrestlers are powerful, huge. Huge, powerful wrestlers. So they're saying, subjects of the king who tried to please him with their thoughts, acts, and words are sure to achieve good fortune. But those who fail to do so will suffer the opposite fate, bad fortune. It is well known that cowherd boys are always joyful as they tend their calves, and that the boys playfully wrestle with each other while grazing their animals in the various forests. Therefore, let us do what the king wants. Everyone will be pleased with us, for the king embodies all living beings. And the logic is that we should wrestle now. And why? Because the king has heard that you are powerful wrestlers, and that you have learned this art while wandering in the fields of Vrindavan with your boyfriends. And he's heard of all the demons you've killed. And now, let us see your power. And we have to please the king, after all, because if the king is pleased because he embodies all persons, he's the embodiment of all persons, he's the head of all persons, then the result will be that everyone will be pleased. Hearing this, Lord Krishna, who liked to wrestle and welcomed the challenge, replied with words appropriate to the time and place. So he had one thing in his mind, the wrestler. Chanura had one thing in his mind. What was that one thing? He was going to present things in such a way that Krishna would wrestle with him. And therefore, the purpose of the king, after all, he was huge and Krishna was delicate. So his mission was to kill him. So he didn't want Krishna to escape at this time. So he spoke in one way, but he had something else in his mind. So similarly, Krishna replied in one way, but he also had something else in his mind. He had it in his mind that he was going to kill Chanura. And this is what he said. Although we are forest dwellers, we are also subjects of the Bhoja king. So we are also, even though we don't really live in Mathura, we're not in his direct city, but we live nearby, but we're also in the kingdom, so we're also subjects of the king. We must gratify his desires, for such behavior will confer upon us the greatest benefit. We are just young boys, but here's the problem, Krishna is saying. This is not a fair match. And in fact, it wasn't a fair match because Krishna is unlimitedly powerful and Chanura is very weak. But we are just young boys and we should play with those of equal strength. The wrestling match must go on properly so that irreligion does not taint the respective members of the audience. So Krishna said, we should fight with boys our own age so no irreligion will touch the organizers of the match. Any other arrangement would be unfair. But then Chanura replied. So Krishna's making believe that he wants to escape from the wrestling match and fight one of the Mathura young teenage boys or something like that. But he also had something else in his mind. Chanura said, you aren't really a child or even a young man. And neither is Balaram, the strongest of the strong. And after all, you playfully killed an elephant who had the strength of 10,000 other elephants. Therefore, you too should fight powerful wrestlers. There's certainly nothing unfair about that. O descendant of Vrishni, so here, he's no longer, he called him Nandanandana early. Nandasuno, hey Nandasuno, hey Rama. But here, he's calling him Vrishni, Mrsneya. You two should fight us powerful wrestlers. There's certainly nothing unfair about that, O descendant of Vrishni. You can show your prowess against me. And Balaram can fight with Mastika. So Chanura was saying, according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, you should fight with wrestlers who are strong like me. You should not fight with mere boys who are unequal to you in strength, who are no match for your strength. And that's the sense of the chapter. Let's just hear how appropriate.
speaks it here. The famous wrestler, Tanura, then began to talk with Krishna and Balaram. "My dear Krishna and Balaram," he said, "we have heard about your past activities, your great heroes." And in fact, the residents of Mathura has just described some of the heroic deeds of Krishna. He's killed Putana, he's killed this one, he's killed that one, he's killed this one, he's killed that one. "So you are great heroes, and therefore the king has called you. We have heard that your arms are very strong. The king and all the people present here desire to see a display of your wrestling abilities. A citizen should be obedient and please the mind of the ruling king. Acting in that way, the citizens attain all good fortune. And one who does not care to act obediently is made unhappy because of the king's anger. And you don't know what this king might do to you if you don't fight with me. You are coward boys, and we have heard that while tending your cows in the forest, you enjoy wrestling with each other. We wish, therefore, for you to join with us in wrestling so that all the people present here, including the king, will be pleased." Krishna immediately understood the purpose of Chinura's statements, and he prepared to wrestle with him. But according to the time and circumstances, he spoke as follows: "You are the subjects of the king of Bhoja, and you live in the jungle. We also are indirectly his subjects, and we try to please him as far as possible. This offer of wrestling is a great favor of his, but the fact is that we are simply boys. We sometimes play in the forest of Vrindavan with our friends who are our own age. We think that to combat persons of equal age and strength is good for us, but to fight great wrestlers like you would not be good for the audience. It would contradict their religious principles." Krishna thus indicated the celebrated strong wrestler should not challenge Krishna and Balaram to fight. In reply to this, Chanur said, "My dear Krishna, we can understand very well that you are neither a child nor a young man. You are transcendental to everyone, as is your big brother Balaram. You have already killed the elephant Kuvalayapita, who is capable of fighting thousands of other elephants. You have killed him in a wonderful way. Because of your strength, it behooves you to compete with the strongest wrestlers amongst us. I therefore wish to wrestle with you, and your elder brother Balaram will wrestle with Mustika." So all this is reaching, moving towards the climax here, a great climax, because the pastime began. Ultimately, even before Krishna took his birth, Kamsa was driving the chariot of the newly married Vasudeva and Devaki, and there was a voice from the sky saying, "You're so good natured, but you're a fool. You're driving the chariot of someone, and the result of your driving the chariot is ultimately going to be that the person born of this marriage is going to kill you. He's going to be your death." So therefore, Kamsa immediately stopped driving the chariot, and he was about to kill Devaki. So then when Kamsa was put Devaki and Vasudeva in prison, and the eighth child was born, they took that eighth child away and brought him to Nandamaras, and then that happens in the fourth chapter of the first canto. Here is the 43rd chapter. So all the other chapters have been under. This has been the major part of the story, the pastime, because and Kamsa was sending so many demons to kill Krishna and Balaram, and Krishna was killing them. So all this is going on, and now, finally, Kamsa is directly in front of Krishna and Balaram. This is the first time he's seen him, and he wants to have him killed. So this major part of Krishna's lila is about to unfold. And in the next chapter, is when Kamsa is killed. And all this is leading up to it, but Kamsa is going to be killed very, very simply. very, very simply by Krishna. So before we start 44, does anyone want to say anything? Ask any questions or comment or tell something? Tell some part of the pastime or something?
Some people in the crowd saw Krishna as a friend, some saw him as a...
Yes, sir. We read that one yesterday.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No. That's wonderful. But that was when Krishna walked in this wonderful way. Different people saw him in different ways, which is, it's very natural, because everyone sees others according to their own consciousness. And as we spoke about yesterday, and Madhavan asked this the question, was it you or Matthew, that was that Krishna displayed himself to each one differently, or they saw him differently? So both are true, because Krishna has unlimited aspects to his nature. According to the consciousness we have, or a living entity has, he perceives a different aspect of Krishna, because it's not possible to perceive all of Krishna, because even he doesn't even know himself fully. And Ananta Sarasa has been describing the qualities with his countless heads and mouths for so long, and yet he can't come to the end of Krishna's quality. So it's not possible to see all of Krishna. So there are two classes of people it described who saw Krishna in the description. And this is also true for in this world too. Those who have a direct relationship with Krishna, that's one class, and those who have an indirect relationship with Krishna don't really have a relationship with Krishna, but we can say indirect because they have a that's good. I woke everyone up. What to do? Is that an alarm clock or what?
I don't know how to operate these
things.
Yes, I think so.
What are you?
Thank you, sorry.
Tell such a lively melody. That's good. So there were two classes of people who saw Krishna that were described. Some saw him as like death. Kamsa saw him as death. And indeed, Krishna was going to be Kamsa's death. That was foretold, and Kamsa understood it. That he saw that Krishna was invincible, he saw him as death. And the wrestlers saw him as the thunderbolt, so powerful. And the Vrishni saw him as the best of their family, or the best of males. And the parents there saw him as just a tender boy. And his relatives, who is it? Does it tell you who it is too?
I'm just trying to put it off. I'm not used to mobile phones.
Oh, this one's very persistent.
I'm just trying to get it off, that's all.
My button's at the top.
Yeah,
I've got it off. Off, yeah. It confirmed it.
Finally. It died.
Sorry about that.
Off, but I'll return. So those who have no relationship with Krishna directly, they have a relationship with the illusory energy, and they're seeing everything through their false ego due to enmity. So they don't really see Krishna, but they see a reflection of their own consciousness. basically. So due to their enmity, they're seeing Krishna's death or a thunderbolt or something that threatens their position as the center. And then those who have a relationship with him, they see him differently in and they taste rasa and that. So Krishna, there's one verse from the Upanishads or something. That Krishna is the reservoir. It's all happening. Phones are going off, cars are coming. Is that a car?
Yeah.
No?
The car and the phone.
What is it?
Phone is here.
I know what the phone is. That part I figured out.
Is it a car engine? Or is it an airplane?
Helicopter.
Helicopter. No, that's an airplane. That's a light plane. Engine. Propeller. So, just like you hear different sounds, different people hear different sounds, and people react differently, completely differently according to their relationship with the phone. If this is your house and you're expecting a phone call from someone, a beloved, then you hear that and you hear that, you experience that person when you hear it, and someone else is trying to do something. And it just might be a noise or a disturbance. So it's the same phone ring, but different people react to it depending on the relationship with the phone or with the circumstances that the phone's in. So similarly, different people react to Krishna differently according to their own consciousness, and Krishna reveals to them things differently, different aspects of himself. Because indeed, Krishna is death. And Krishna is a thunderbolt. He says this in the Bhagavad Gita, Mrityu Savas, what's the verse? Mrityu Savas Chaham. Yes, so I am death. So Krishna is death. And Krishna says, of weapons, I'm the thunderbolt. So this is Krishna, but this is how Krishna is perceived in the external, in the world through his external energy. Because the thunderbolt, When there's a thunderstorm and it's close by, I mean, you may be a very brave person, but if it's close by and there's a thunderbolt hits close by, lightning bolt, it's shocking, it's terrifying, because it's so much more powerful than we are. It brings us to our actual situation of insignificance and how precarious and dangerous our position is. So that's our That's the materialist relationship with Krishna, ultimately. So those who had the relationship with Krishna, he is the reservoir of pleasure for them. That's that verse of Rasopisya, that's where Prabhupada gets the that term from, of reservoir of pleasure. That whatever pleasure someone gets, it is ultimately coming from the great reservoir of pleasure, Krishna, and the reservoir of all relationship and the reservoir of all rasa, of all tastes and mellows within this world and beyond this world. So there were, out of the different rasas, there are, according to Rasa Shastra, and the masters of Rasa Shastra, one of the masters of Rasa Shastra, and there are different 12 different rasas, is Korma. But that's the different kinds of tastes, sour, sweet, bitter, and things like that. But this kind of rasa is in relationships with Krishna. So they're described in Bhaktur Samasa Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, and they're more or less in the different drama shastras of India. They're also the same rasas are described. possible, well, there's some variation in the interpretations and things.
So that was described a little earlier, and in detail the different
the conjugal rasa was described, the friendship rasa, the parental, the village people, the people who felt fear, the people who felt astonishment at his beauty, the attraction, all the different rasas are described.
Fame had spread widely in Mathura.
Everyone in Mathura knew.
Okay.
One reason is because that's the way it. That's what it's like in without radios and televisions and newspapers, is that everyone does. People have something to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear about this, and you hear about that, and you hear about this, and you hear about that. So, and then especially because they heard about Krishna, that he had killed this huge demon and that demon, and then they found out that he was coming to Mathura, and they heard he's so beautiful. And then they heard that he was actually the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. And they heard all the different stories, because that's what people do. Hey, did you hear the latest? And usually we condemn this as kamya kata na sunive. Don't hear this village talk, you know, about what's this person gossiping, basically. Generally that's completely condemned if one wants to make advancement in spiritual life, because it keeps one in the material world, this mundane news, and then you hear, especially when you hear bad things about people, and we say, oh no, but inside we're thinking, oh yes, very good, someone got some misery. So generally that's condemned in civilized circles, and especially Vaishnava circles. But when it comes to talking about Krishna and his activities and that type of gram, when the gram, the village of the Katar is Vrindavan, and the person doing it, performing the activities of Krishna and his associates, then it's glorious, and that's the perfection of life, is to be always engaged in hearing and talking and remembering these things. But it's, yeah, so the news. Yeah, news spreads. And it's in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, when Vidura enters the Hastinapur, there's Vidura didn't speak about that Krishna had actually departed already. He did not want to tell bad news. Didn't want bad news to come out of his mouth, because that affects the heart. It's too painful for him. And then, and it said, and you see that you can make an experiment. If you know some bad news, unless there's a particular direct reason why you should speak it to others or someone. If you don't speak it, it's not like the bad news won't get to that person anyway, or good news on that level. Somehow or another, news has its own way of traveling, and it doesn't need any of us. Somehow or another, it just travels. Only if we could actually become absorbed in thinking about Krishna with great devotion, That would be, and then talking about him, that would be so superior. Bring happiness to the heart. Bring happiness to the heart. Not to die of imidvizami. Unfortunate as I am, I have no attraction. I have attraction for so many things, but not this thing. Chaitanya Mataji, what chapter, in which chapter did Krishna kill Bakasura?
In chapter 11.
Yes. And who else was killed in that chapter?
Can you pull down the two trees?
11. That was in
10,
yeah.
I'm really guessing because that little cast in there, little Bansura.
Yeah, Bansura was killed too. And also that was the chapter, in the beginning of that chapter, session. It was when the lady who was selling fruit, the people who were selling fruit and things like that, they had, who traveled from part of one village to the other, they had one of the responsibilities they had was to talk of the news of what was going on. Because people don't know what's happening, so there's someone who's come from that village, and they're all related in Braja too. There's relatives there, so it's good for business also if you have all the news, because then everyone comes over to find out what happens. So the fruit seller lady, who was a Palindi, she was one of the local forest dwellers, she came to the news and all the fruits, and when Krishna saw that, he wanted some fruits, so what did he do?
He changed his grain.
Yeah, what happened? There's a cute sequence. What happened?
He tried to go and get the grain.
He came out of jewels, the grains.
At first, he picked up with his little hands. So he was only how old at that time? He was just 3 years old or something. So he was just so cute, and he was, well, how would you say, clothed in the four directions only. Digjam. He was clothed just by the air.
Waist belt.
Yeah, a little string around. You see this in India. People in little children, they just wear some protective talisman around their waist, nothing else, a little black thread. So he came over, he grabbed some grains in his hand, and by the time he got there was nothing, practically no grains left even. And Krishna, so she was so captivated by the beauty of Krishna that she filled up his hands as much as he could possibly carry with fruit. And then
then I think all the grains, whatever they were, he put them in a basket, and it is said that they became all jewels in the basket.
Bhagavatam describes that, it doesn't talk about the relationship between the grains and the jewels, but I talk about the basket became full of jewels. Fruit for jewels. But actually this is Krishna's reciprocation. With his devotees. Because fruit is common and jewels are rare. So we give something, tarapadruvamartadam, we give something temporary to Krishna, that's quite common, and we get back something eternal, of great value, something of little value, and acceptance. And if it's given with the proper consciousness, the proper heart, and obviously she wasn't thinking, if I give this to Krishna, I'm going to get jewels back.
This is
It wasn't like that. It was just simple affection for this beautiful little boy. Simple affection. Very innocent. Well, Krishna was going to the fruit vendor very hastily. Most of the grains he was holding fell. Nevertheless, the fruit vendor filled Krishna's hands with fruits, and her fruit basket was immediately filled with jewels and gold. Here's the comment of Vishnu. That actually, that pastime is just two verses. Here's Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's comment. The fruit seller did not even get a full handful of grains because the grains fell on the path as Krishna hastily approached. Krishna exchanged the few grains remaining in his hand for some fruits while saying, "Give me some fruit." The Palinda woman selling fruits became overcome with affection and filled Krishna's hands with pilu and other fruits. Pilu is a Vrindavan little fruit. And being greedy for the fruits because of the affection and because he wanted fruits, Krishna somehow managed to hold them all in his small hands by the influence of his Aishwarya Shakti. In return, the Palinda woman received all types of wealth, including the treasure of Krishna Prem, from Krishna, who possessed the power to bestow all fruits. Attractive.
Prashant, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Is the woolly wagtail, is that called karari bird?
Yeah. Okay. That's how it, yeah. Compared to the dancing eyes of the of the gopis. Jumping here and there, here and there. Karari. No, Karari is, no, no. No, it's not. Karari.
Chikora bird.
Huh? No, no. Karari is something different. Kanjana. No, what's the bird? Which one do you know? It's Kanjana, I think. I can't remember that. Karari is like an eagle that lives by the sea, by water. And the Karari bird is spoken of in the last chapter of the 10th canto, while the gopis are experiencing prema vaichitya. They're with Krishna. Krishna's lying there, but they're experiencing separation from him. And they can't sleep. And as they can't sleep, they hear the cry of the Karari bird at night. It's Kanjana. Kanjana. In Dwarka. This is in Dwarka, the Queens. It's like a sea eagle or seahawk or something. Do you remember the name? You remember?
I don't remember. I read it in my heart recently. He hasn't given a proper translation. He's using Kanjana.
For?
Well, whatever it is, a bird.
Oh, the bird, yeah, it's Kanjana. Because it's also said that Kanjana Lochana.
Yeah, so it has probably very attractive eyes, round eyes.
It's something. Always moving. Mm-hmm. If that's the bird. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyone have anything else about Krishna they would like to say? You don't have the cough. Good. Krishna saved you.
So far.
Yeah, nice. And yours seems to have gotten most 98% better.